like an ultra is so similar to the recovery journey. Like there's so many emotions involved. There's so many high points. There's so many low points. There's parts that feel impossible. There's times you want to quit. There's times where, you know, your body starts to fail you, your mind starts to fail you, your spirit starts to fail you. And like, if you just keep going one step at a time, then something beautiful starts to happen.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
A&M Pizza, authentic Italian food made with the finest quality ingredients. Proudly serving the Lebanon and Lancaster area since 1980. Stop by their Campbelltown location today. You'll be happy you did. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063. In this episode, we have repeat guest David Millar. He was on episode 133. David is a medical student at Penn State College of Medicine and an ultra endurance athlete who is 6 years sober and an advocate for addiction recovery. He is about to take on the Ironstone 100K, a grueling 62-mile trail race over 8,000 feet of elevation gain through the Pennsylvania mountains. That's wild. That is this Saturday, the 12th. But David isn't just running for himself. He's running to raise awareness for addiction and recovery. This isn't about medals or finish lines. It's about starting conversations, honoring lives lost, and standing up for those still suffering. David, I appreciate you coming back to the studio, especially with the 100K race literally just days away.
Thanks for having me back. This is my first time ever doing a repeat on the same podcast. So
really?
Yeah.
First time?
I'm looking forward to it.
Let's go. All right. Awesome, man. Well, yes, thank you for making the trip.
Yeah.
And being here. I'm excited. And I do want to do a quick shout out. I was at Dunham's. I don't know if you've ever been to Dunham's here in Lebanon. It's a sporting goods store.
Oh, okay.
Sporting goods store. Yeah. So I was there over the weekend. Earlier this year, I won some cornhole boards at a golf tournament for a local nonprofit called Nick Services. Shout out to the team at Nick Services. I went in there to buy bean bags. The gentleman behind, who's a young man, behind the register, and he's like, hey, you saw my hat? He's like, I just want to let you know I listened to your podcast. And I'm like, dude, really? And he's like, yeah, I do. I listen to it. He graduated from Cedar Crest back in like 2022 and he runs track and field.
Nice.
He's at Shippensburg now. And it was just really cool. I was like, man, you made my day. I was like, you made my day, man. So if you're listening, it was a cool moment, you know, when somebody like recognizes you or acknowledges you for stuff you do.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So a little, awesome. Little side story there before we jump in.
Yeah.
Because you got to thank the listeners and people giving attention, but I really think the podcast here and your story, like we shared on episode 133, it touches people and it lets you see that, hey, there's other people out there going through some stuff, you know? So I want to start off giving the listeners kind of a brief synopsis of your story.
Yeah, so I grew up in Ocean City, New Jersey, had pretty regular upbringing, and ended up going to college after high school. Wasn't really into school, didn't really know what I wanted to do at the time. Was a big drinker, a big partier, got into drugs and went away to school. And school for me was kind of just a free-for-all to just kind of do what I wanted. I was in school to be a nurse, but I wasn't really committed. And my life was just very hedonistic, I'd say, at the time. And eventually that spiraled out of control. Addiction got really bad and dropped out of school, came home. Burned a lot of bridges, was homeless, in and out of rehabs, in and out of psychiatric wards, and addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol, wasting away. And that was for about a year. And when I was 19, I had a chance to either go back down to Florida to try to go back into rehab and get better, or I could go to the Atlantic City homeless shelter. When I was coming out of detox, and still don't know how till this day, but I ended up getting on that one. Sobriety as a whole, especially being really young and hung out with them, wore off on me a little bit, you know, started going to AA, started going to meetings, got a sponsor, stayed down in Florida, didn't come back home, which I think was a big thing. And then got an opportunity to go out to California to do a program out there, which was about a year long intensive sober living behavioral modification program. So I took that. I went to LA and I lived in LA for about a year with a bunch of roommates that were all trying to get sober like me. Met a bunch of great people, changed my life, taught me how to be an adult, taught me how to stay sober. I was active in AA. I was active in the community, started working out, started running, started eating better, started prioritizing my health, prioritizing the people around me, and kind of just been following God, following my spirit, my soul, whatever you want to call it, from, you know, 6 years ago till up until now. And, you know, it's led me to really get into running. And now I do a lot. I would go back to college and get on the team as a student athlete and competed in college on the team running cross country and track. And then that would lead me to run ultra marathons, which is kind of what I'm doing now, because that's what I really, it's my favorite form of running is ultra marathons. And I would end up dropping out of nursing school and trying to go into medical school. And now I'm attending medical school, second year medical student. And yeah, so it's been a whirlwind, still sober as well. Still, you know, going to AA, still got a lot of, really good sober friends and, yeah, just following God.
Your life has been such a journey at such a young age, a lot of ups, a lot of downs. You know, in some of your posts, you've mentioned, you know, close friends having to watch them, you know, battle their demons and, you know, some of them maybe even losing their lives. You know, it's heavy. It's a very heavy topic, very personal topic. But how has that shaped your perspective, not just as a future doctor, but also as a person?
As in seeing other people struggle themselves or other people having to watch me struggle?
First part.
So seeing other people struggle themselves. Correct. It's tough, man, because addiction is just one of those things where it's very like community oriented, but it's also like very individual at the same time. Like if you don't want it to your core, or if you don't know for sure that you are an addict or your mind thinks a certain way, or you haven't played out all of your options and all of your schemes yet, then like there's very little chance that you're actually going to achieve long-term sobriety. I'd say for me, I was broken. Like I was at my end. I had played out every single thing that I thought would work. I played it out in real time and it collapsed. And I knew for a fact that like there was no other option. But there's a lot of people that you see that like they keep going. Like they still have more ideas. They still think that like they can do it. And I'd say it's like, yeah, it makes you exercise a lot of empathy that I like to make sure I, you know, remember and keep that in the back of my mind, especially going into the medical field and seeing people from, you know, suffering from a bunch of different diseases, not even just addiction. I think empathy is like a great thing to exercise. So
I saw your post for your run coming up for the Ironstone 100K, and like we talked off air, you know, I was in need of a guest, and I'm like, David crushed it the first time he's here. Let's have him come back on. That's obviously very mental, very physical. How do you prepare, you know, to run 62 miles through the mountains at the same time? You're not just running for yourself, but you're running to spread awareness for addiction recovery.
Yeah, so I did this a couple years back before I was in med school. I actually did 100K. It was the same distance. I was down in Virginia. That time around, though, I was raising money. So I ended up raising around $5,000, and I did it through a nonprofit. I partnered up with a nonprofit near my school. So this time around is kind of just like, I wanted to do it again because obviously it's something I have my own experience with. It's something that is very close to my heart. I have a lot of friends that are sober, trying to get sober, have passed on because of this disease. So it's just always been something that I want to advocate for, that I want to see. You know, I think there's a lot of stigma around it too. I've experienced that. Even though I'm 6 years sober, it's like you tell somebody that you used to have a problem or used to be addicted to drugs, you know, there's definitely stigma. You can't really talk about it all the time. And I don't know. I just feel like it's part of my purpose to kind of advocate for that. And in terms of preparing for it, I mean, I don't know. Every time I run an ultra marathon, like I'm always thinking about recovery because it just, like, an ultra is so similar to the recovery journey. Like, there's so many emotions involved. There's so many high points. There's so many low points. There's parts that feel impossible. There's times you want to quit. There's times where, you know, your body starts to fail you, your mind starts to fail you, your spirit starts to fail you. And like, if you just keep going one step at a time, then something beautiful starts to happen. Every time I run an ultra, I get to a place where I want to stop. And the first thing that I think about is those first 30 days in my own recovery and how hard that was. And then I think about, well, if I stopped in that first month of my recovery 6 years ago, like, I would have none of the stuff I have now. So like, I'm definitely, why would I stop in this race? Right. You know, so.
And I imagine, you know, running, it's not just the terrain, but it's the, like you mentioned, the isolation, it's the inner struggle. And like you're just saying, those parallel a lot with the mental fight that people face with addiction. So what is that like when you're out there running, you know, and you want to quit or you want to give up, you know, how do you overcome it? And how does that tie into, like you're saying, with your sobriety and addiction recovery?
I think it's just thinking back to that first year of recovery and thinking about like how like hard it was. I was waking up in Los Angeles. I still can remember it to a T, and just thinking like I just hated who I was. I had a bunch of anxiety, a bunch of depression, mental stuff going on. Couldn't really talk to people. Didn't know who I was. Had no confidence, no self-esteem. And just, it wasn't like a race though. It was just like all the time I felt that way. I don't feel that way today. So when I run, it's just kind of like brings me back to that almost and reminds me that I was in a position like this 6 years ago. Like, this run that I'm doing is like nothing compared to that. And I've run like 100-mile races. I've run across the Grand Canyon. Like, nothing that I've done physically has ever came close, like pain level wise, to that first year in recovery. It was very challenging. Yeah. 100%.
And you said it was like a stigma still to this day. Like,
yeah, I think like maybe unconsciously, I don't think it's, personal. I try not to take it personal, but I think that there's definitely things that I wasn't able, for example, a big reason I want to be a doctor is because I had this whole experience with addiction. I was a patient in the medical system. I met with doctors, met with nurses, met with social workers, therapists. I feel like all those things and my overall experience in recovery, it like makes sense why that would push me to want to go into the medical field, because I was literally a patient in it. And that's a big reason why I wanted to go into medical school. So when I was applying into medical school, I wrote about my recovery on my application because that's why I want to be a doctor. And they asked, the whole entire application is basically like, why do you want to be a doctor? Yeah. Well, I want to be a doctor because like I have this experience where I got sober. So I basically like pour my heart out on this application and I run it by like people at my college and people that are like, you know, advisors for the medical school application process, and they're like, you can't really talk about this. This is going to be viewed.
Tell me more about this.
It's going to be viewed. Yeah, it's going to be viewed as like a red flag, basically. So the number one reason why I want to be a doctor, I'm not allowed to talk about on my medical school application. So I ran it by more people because I was like, I want to like make sure, because I literally like wrote my whole application. So like it wasn't even just about like, I can't talk about my recovery. It's like, this is going to be like a time consuming activity. I'm going to have to go back and change everything I wrote.
Yeah.
And you know, more people are like, you have other cards to play, like the running. And I did a lot of research in undergrad. I'd kind of like resurrected my GPA. So that was like a cool story to tell. Mm-hmm. So they were like, I would talk about that. Like, why would you risk talking about something that could be viewed as a red flag when you have other things to talk about? Now, like, you know, I can answer that question. Like, well, I would want to risk talking about the recovery piece because like, that's literally why I want to be a doctor. But at the time I kind of had to take a step back and be like, okay, like this is the stigma. I want to be a doctor. I'm not going to like let my ego get involved and like write about this. So I'm going to like change up my application, which I ended up doing. But yeah, it's just funny because the number one reason why I want to be a doctor, I couldn't even talk about on my medical school application. So Penn State doesn't know any of that about me.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's really wild.
They know I run ultras. They know, you know, my GPA used to be like a 2.0 and then I brought it up to like a 3-something. They know that I've, you know, done a lot of volunteering. They know about my research, but they don't know about my recovery, which I think is like the biggest piece of my life, arguably.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And to me, it's like you've came through to the other side and now it's like, I want to be a doctor. I want to help people because I've been through it, and to not be able to like write about it at that time is wild.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know for sure. Like, you know, if I put it on my application, would I have still gotten into medical school or not? I don't know. I only got into, you know, a couple schools. So
yeah.
Maybe if I did, I wouldn't have gotten into any. Maybe I would have gotten into more. I'm not sure. But I heard people that like had more experience than me like say, I don't think you should do this. So I was like, all right, gonna listen.
Check the ego a little bit. Yeah. But at the same time, like, to me, that's such a real like story. You know what I mean? It's real. It's true. You know, it's why you're doing it. It's who you are. Man, it would have been interesting had you kept it in.
Just to see.
Yeah. Like now I was like, oh,
sometimes
man.
Sometimes I wonder about that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Like seriously, that would have been wild. But who knows? You know,
could have just been a long shot. You know, like somebody picks it up like there's a lot of sober people out there. There's got to be sober people on the boards at some of these medical schools, I would imagine. That's a lot of doctors have problems. A lot of doctors have problems that they develop later on in life because they have access to, first of all, it's like so stressful, like a lot of the fields. And then they also have access to like writing prescriptions and they're around, you know, the hospital all the time. It's like a lot of people, especially back in the day, this was like a very common thing. So like I would imagine that there's definitely people on the higher ups or on the boards that are like reading these applications. Like all it takes is like the one person that has like 20 years of sobriety to pick up the application and be like, oh, like I get this. Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I talk about it like I had no other choice. Like I could have like put it on there and put it out there, but I just decided against it based on the people that I talked to.
You're comfortable talking, like, do you talk with friends about it there, like other med students or?
Yeah. It's not like something that I like bring up right away, but, it comes up for sure. If you're close to me or, you know, if it is the right environment to come up, I have no problem sharing it. Obviously I have the social media page, share it on there all the time.
Right.
Not everybody follows that though. I wouldn't say that I'm like very social about that social media page. I kind of keep it on as much on the down low as I can. I don't really repost any of it on my personal account or anything like that. I try to keep it like, cause one, it's like the more people that follow that account that like I know on a personal level, you might get this way too. I kind of get in my head a little bit and I'm like, I feel like I can't really like be like myself as much. Like if I just have like a bunch of followers that like I don't know anything about my followers and they're literally just following me because like they saw a piece of content that like I posted that came like 100% from me, like I can kind of just be like, I post whatever I want, you know? But then it's like you have people, not that it's a bad thing, but it's just like I struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, because it's like you post something and it resonates with a bunch of people that you have no ties to and you don't know. You're like, oh, this is great. It's really hitting, you know, people are appreciating it. But then, yeah, when you have like friends or family follower or close connections or people that you haven't seen in like 10 years, you know, since high school graduation or something, you're like, oh, it makes you think and maybe hesitate a little bit at the same time. Or if you don't do that page, you know, how would you know? If you don't start a podcast, how would you know? So you can't let like a small handful of people, because who knows if they're even judging you anyway, you know what I mean? If they are judging you, fuck it, what does it matter?
Right.
You know? Because it's like, maybe they're just jealous because they didn't decide to do it or think about doing it. Or if they think it's not cool, well, then that's on them. Because, look, there's 70,000 people for your end that think it is, you know. And it's like there's people out there that will think what you're doing is cool and phenomenal. Or, like I said, it'll resonate with people, you know.
Yeah.
Just like the podcast, just like your page. So I want to talk more about your Instagram social media page in a little bit. But I just want to kind of wrap up the race, right? Because that's coming up. That's literally this Saturday. Let's take a quick sip break, though. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. I feel like I'm stumbling all over the place. I'm going to have to edit so much of mine.
I don't think you are.
Oh, I appreciate it. You have good bedside manners, as they say, you know. Yeah. But, my gosh, where do I want to pick back up here? Okay. Oh, yes, this is where I thought would be good.
I didn't answer your question either. I don't know if you want me to fully answer that. About, like, being in medical school and, like, not, like, telling people that I'm sober or not.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is like, especially when I first got to medical school, it was like I had to meet people. And the way that you meet people when you're 20 years old is you go out to the bar. So, you know, I'm hanging out at a bar for the sole purpose to just like get accustomed with my classmates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are like, oh, you know, have a beer, I'm buying shots. And you kind of just have to be like, no, I'm not, I don't really do that. So I feel like that's a part that kind of gets tricky and hard, but I've gotten a lot better with it. Over the years, and there's like certain tools you can use. Like I always drive because like if there's a situation where like I just don't feel like comfortable, or I feel like God forbid my sobriety's at risk, which it feel like it never really is, but if it were, like just get in my car, go home. But yeah, no, it's just funny because now it's like I'm the, like most of the time I'm like the DD, which was never the case back in the day. And now I'm like the sober person driving around a bunch of like drunk people.
Yeah. Well, everybody needs that.
At 3 a.m.
Yeah, DD. Yeah. Right. Oh, at 3 a.m. That's brutal. But like your friends probably appreciate it. It's like having someone they can rely on, you know what I mean? And it keeps you like, hey, look, I'm the DD. I'm not drinking. Cause some people might like, well, why not? Why aren't you drinking? Or why not? You know, even complete strangers might try to push it. You know what I mean?
But yeah. 100%.
But it's like, look, I'm the DD. I don't need to drink. Or I feel like sometimes people, think, you know, oh, I gotta have a drink because it's just what everyone's doing, or my friends are doing it. So, you know, or we're going out, so we gotta have a couple drinks. And I don't know. It's like, you don't need to drink to have fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
As a medical student, what do you wish more healthcare professionals understood or talked about when it comes to addiction and recovery?
I actually will give a lot of credit to the medical system for a big thing that they push out there is Alcoholics Anonymous, which would be like my number one, because obviously like that's how I got sober. So I have a close tie with that. But I feel like they do, like, all things considered, and in other areas that like aren't as much like this, like in different fields. But in addiction medicine, like they really do like push that, which is crazy because you would think like modern medicine and everything. And there is like modern medicine that is used for addiction, like Suboxone. And, you know, you can get, I forget what it's called, it begins with an N. You can get like a shot that kind of like makes your body have like a reaction every time you drink alcohol. So you never want to drink alcohol. There is like modern medicine techniques, but all things considered, like they are still very, like at the cornerstone from what I see, is still like, oh, you should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, here's a list of meetings. Like, go there, put your hand up, share about your situation, get some phone numbers, like, talk to people who have experienced what you're experiencing, and like, get the help that you need. I think that I'm always surprised, like, when that comes up in class. Like, even when I was in nursing school, like, it came up and I was like, oh, wow, like, that's crazy. Even after all this time, we still don't know, like, the brain is just, we're in such a stone age, right? And that's like what kind of pulls me toward that field with the brain, because like, it's like an unknown frontier. I feel like there's not a lot of unknown frontiers left on the planet. Like, I feel like it's like the brain, it's like the ocean, and then it's space.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like one of those three.
I would say those three.
Yeah, so... Yeah. Yeah, we don't really know. And even after all this time, and like, even like, just Alcoholics Anonymous been around for like over 100 years, and it's like still kicking, like still saving alcoholics' lives, giving alcoholics like somewhere to go. You know, like 4th of July just passed, you know, there's AA meetings. You can go to an AA meeting if you're just getting sober. It's just like, I'm surprised like how much that is still preached in medical school and in nursing school and just in healthcare in general. But I don't really know. I would say that like people, like addicts are really hard to deal with, like especially when they're in the thick of it. I was very hard to deal with. I was not like a fun, enjoyable person to be around, especially if I was locked in a hospital or a psych ward that I didn't want to be in. I was a total dick. So I think just coming back to that empathy point, I think empathy, like practicing empathy, and it's so hard, especially if you like haven't been through it yourself. Like, I've been through it. So I know, like, if I see like a homeless person on the street or something, or a homeless person, like a hard time, or well, I worked in the ER for a while before I went to med school. Like, I just kind of have that instilled in me now because of my situation. I don't know if it'll ever leave, because I've literally been there. Like, I look at some of these people and I see myself. So I think that not everybody has that. And I don't even know if you can teach that. I think it's just something that like you have to have either just genetically wired in you, or you've had to like manually wire it through experience in yourself by just an unfortunate circumstance happening to you. So that's like the big thing. And it's like a disease, you know. I feel like some people don't see it as a disease, addiction. And you know, I was told that I had a willpower problem for a while, by people that like didn't really know, but like, you know, here I sit, I run like crazy. I don't think I have a willpower problem, because like I feel like I exercise a lot of willpower on the daily basis, but like, you know, it's just, it's in my family too. Like it's kind of like a genetic, I don't know for sure if it's a genetic thing. I think that's still like, debatable in the literature, but, you know, it's prevalent in my family. So it's just something that I felt like was bound to happen to me at some point. It's just the way that my mind works.
Yeah. I can't see you being a jerk. Like, you're saying, dude, like some of the hospital stuff. I can't see it, but I'm glad I know you now, you know, and not in those moments, because, yeah, I guess I could see how people could be completely different than what they are now, you know.
Right.
And I want to add a fourth thing, the pyramids, right? The pyramids are pretty unknown.
The pyramids.
Going back to that, the ocean and stuff, and the brain. So, but you're going to be like a brain surgeon. That's
what I want
to
do.
That's what you want to do, yeah. To kind of like tie that all back in, AA, why do you think it has been so successful for, we say, 100 some years? It's been around for so long. Why is it, and it's still preached today, like you said, even with all this modern medicine stuff?
Spiritual transformation, I think, like just going after the holistic side of medicine. It's surprisingly useful. And I think that because we don't understand what it does to people, we tend to shy away from it. Like, we understand what drugs do, right? Like, if you take something for your blood pressure or something for your anxiety or depression, like, we know what that does. But like, if somebody goes to AA and just goes through the 12 steps and develops a relationship with a higher power, you know, writes out all their inventory, everything that they've ever done wrong in their lives, like shares it with another individual who's also sober and who's like guiding them through the program. Like, we don't really understand like what that's doing at, like, I don't even know if it's like a molecular, like biology thing. I think it's more of just like a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
And there's like power in that, like a lot of power in that. And that's why like all the tools that I use and that I've learned and use still like from AA are just like, so like prayer. Like, it's just like, I don't know what it's necessarily doing, but I know that I started doing it and my life got significantly better. And then I like started praying more. And then I started praying on my knees because guys were telling me, oh, like you don't get on your knees when you pray. And I'm like, I don't, never tried it. Then I start doing that and it's working. Now it's working like double time as good, you know? Yeah, and it's just like stuff like that. It's the same thing. It's not even like prayer or God stuff. We can talk about this like journaling, you know, just like something about journaling, something about like writing out your thought, like all this stuff I post on my social media started from me journaling. Like that's how I started. Like I've always kind of been a writer, but all of that like self-help stuff, that was all just like me just spilling out my thoughts on a piece of paper. And like something happens when you like put thoughts down, it's like you almost hear it back like in a second language. So all that stuff is kind of like taught in AA. And then also just like the bond that you make with people, and you know, you're surrounded by people that are literally dealing with the same exact things that you're dealing with and have the same problems as you, and have, if you're dealing with something, there's like a 99.9% chance that the person next to you has dealt with the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like a safe environment. You can just talk about whatever. And yeah. So I think there's a lot of magic in between the lines that goes on in AA, and I don't know. I can't really explain it.
Seems like it all somehow correlates, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know how, but it all does. Being able to get something off your chest with somebody that's gone through a very similar situation.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's not, no drug involved, but yet it almost works.
Yeah.
Like a drug, you know, and it's something at a higher level of faith, and maybe just, I don't know. I mean, we're all human and we all like to be loved, understood, and felt needed and appreciated, you know? Right. So maybe it's something in at that level, like you said, a spiritual level, but you know, you're 6 years sober, you know, an advocate for addiction recovery, getting ready for this run. You know, you're running now. I see your posts on social media. I was like, I know people that run locally, they've been on the podcast, Greg Mannion, Mitch Spittle, and I'm like, this David Millar is right up there with them. All this kind of comes together, and like you said, you have this social media page that, for the listeners that don't know, it's an Instagram page called David Millar Mindset. Over 76,000 followers, over 770 posts, and like it's growing through the roof. The engagement's through the roof, and everything is so motivational. How did you start it? Why did you come about? Like you mentioned journaling and such, but like, what was the moment you're like, you know what? I'm just gonna put this out there and let's see what happens.
I think it was just I got into the self-help world when I was getting sober, and a big person in my life who's passed away due to addiction, but he was my manager in the house I was at out west, and he would always play like super hardcore motivational stuff every morning. So like the first thing we would do as a house every morning is like listen to that. And at the time it didn't really like rub off on me, but like as I continued to like get more into working out and fitness and wanted to go into medicine, like I kind of just started picking up more self-help books and really getting into it. And I don't know like why I just relate to it. Like I like starting my day with it. I like the feeling of being energized by somebody talking with passion about what they do. And it started with me just sending clips into group chats with some of my friends. My phone, like, and I'm sure anybody's phone that's goes to AA and is in AA group chats at 5 a.m, like dings like crazy because everybody's like sending spiritual literature and sending like motivational quotes. Cause like everybody just, they're into it, you know? So my phone does that too. And, I would also contribute to it because I would send my motivational, whatever I was sending out. And it kind of just transformed into like, I just want to put it out there for more people. I just want to see what's going to happen. You know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of things, like you're just not afraid to try. I've just been less and less afraid to try things out. I feel like as I've continued to get sober and get more comfortable in my skin and, begin to like realize who I am. And that was the social media was just like, cause you know, you always like, you're nervous about it, you know, you got to sit through that awkward period where you have like 30 followers and nobody's liking your post, but you're still posting and you know, people are seeing it.
Right.
And it's cause even if you make a separate Instagram page, that's not affiliated with your page, like the algorithm's still going to like throw your profile out there for all the followers on your person. Like somehow it's linked, you know what I mean?
Oh,
so
yeah.
like, Yeah, there was like a 5 month period probably where I had to like sit through that like terrible phase, but it's like necessary. That's literally with anything. That's with running too. Yeah. It's with medicine. Yeah. Like when I start like learning something new, like I don't know shit about it, but I need to like sit there and like figure it out. And like it's no different like on the social media stuff. Like I needed to sit there with 30 followers and just look like I had no idea what I was doing, because I didn't have any idea what I was doing, but I just like consistency. Like yeah. You just stay consistent with it. And now it's just like, it's just kind of blossomed into what it is now. And I don't know. I don't know if it'll stay the same that it is now. I don't know if I'll change it. I don't know if I'll make it more medicine related, more recovery related. I'm kind of just like praying on it and going with it. And, yeah. You know, just that's it. Yeah. Just
letting it flow. And like you said, it's like people are going to judge no matter what. So why not, you know, have fun with it? You only get one go around.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you can leave an impact on somebody. And I've found through the podcast, like there's people here locally and throughout that, like, I hardly know. I don't know. Some of them I don't even know. And they're like, I listen to every episode. Like, you should have this person on and you should have this person.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I got like 4 or 5 people on that they recommended that I never met before. And it just grows. So it's kind of neat to see, like, I'm sure for you, the amount of like different reposts or shares that people do with your story is probably wild to see, you know, to see that.
It's a good feeling, like going, because a lot of the sobriety stuff too, like people will be like, I think I have a problem, and just kind of being able to like, my first response is always like, go to AA, like there's AA meetings near you, like go to AA, get your hand up. Yeah. But there's people that have been like communicating with me through DMs on Instagram about like sobriety or whatnot for like probably months now. And it's great. Like I kind of just have like a little online relationship with them. Like they check in. Yeah. They tell me like how they're doing. And,
that's phenomenal.
And some of them that have like really even been struggling bad, like I'll be like, bro, just give me your phone number. And I'll just throw them in a group chat with me and some of my buddies. Yeah. So they get those 5 a.m. dings every morning.
Right. I love that. Yeah.
And then they're oh, I should have never DM'd this guy in the first place.
That's so cool, though, because it's like, man, you're making such an impact that literally people are like, yeah, I want to, here's my cell, you know, here's my cell phone. And, and let's get that conversation going. Now I know why you have your notifications on silent.
Yeah.
Because I see that now, I understand why. I was like, what does he have that on silent for? He does a lot of stuff in school, so maybe, you know, he's busy working, but that makes sense. Right. Hey, when inspiration hits, you got to share it. You got to post it, you know?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. That's like another big thing, like with the page too, and advice I give people that are like trying to start stuff like that. Because I just kind of, I try not to think on things too much. Like if I think about something or if I watch something, it's easy for me to start thinking like, oh, should I post this? Like maybe it'll come off the wrong way. If it's somebody that's like politically, like not, you know, in the political world, not viewed well, like, but at the same time, it's just like, it's not about that. Like, it's just about, I thought this was cool and it resonated with me. And like, I'm going to share this because, you know, I want it to help somebody else. And I know it's helping other people through my social media. I know for a fact that it is. And I think just like eliminating like those like thoughts that come up, like especially like the writing posts that I do too, because those are like even more vulnerable and they're all from me.
Yeah.
So like sometimes I'm like, do I really want to share this with a bunch of people? But I don't know. Like I think that the best way to do things is to just go with your gut instinct. Like just don't think about it too much. Just post it.
So. Yeah, and you do post, for the listeners that maybe haven't visited the page yet, short video content, right, from other influencers that, again, resonates with you. But like you mentioned, it's also like your maybe online journal, you could say. Right. And you really do put your heart out there. So we picked some of the posts you had shared with me just the other day, and we kind of narrowed it down to 6 or 7. So I just want to kind of read them, and if you want to give like some meaning behind it, put some understanding behind it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's it.
All right, let's do it. Okay. So the first one, again, these are all on Instagram. You guys can check them out. Everyone else saw a giant. David just saw a target. That's what happens when you spend enough nights in the field with God. You stop fearing what other people call impossible.
I think that kind of sums up the question about what is it about AA that makes it so worthwhile. And I think just being in the trenches and not having anywhere else to turn except prayer and trusting that you're going through this suffering for some deeper purpose that maybe you can't understand right now just does something to your mind to the point where like you know, like I got through that, like, and nothing else has been comparably like more painful than that was. Like, I just feel like I can kind of almost take on anything, like, especially with the medical school thing. I mean, the medical school thing, like, I had every reason not to go to medical school. I had people telling me I shouldn't apply. I had people getting mad at me for applying because, you know, understandably, like, I'm a white male. My SAT score is shit. I've never been smart in my life. I was only 2 years sober off of like crack cocaine at the time. And like, I say that I want to like go and do something crazy, like go into medical school. And it's just because like, I felt like I had God in my life. Like there was just a underlying faith there that I felt called to do something. And I just trust that God is going to put me in the space that I'm supposed to be in. And, you know, going back to like the Instagram post as well, it's just like following that instinct, like just feeling it out. You know, when you're plugged in, you can kind of like see opportunities that I feel like people are too distracted to see. Like, so that's like what the prayer and the meditation and the journaling like kind of does for me. It kind of like brings me down to this baseline to kind of like see the opportunities that like my higher power is like trying to throw in my life so that I can like take them up on them, you know? And yeah, going back to that story with David and Goliath, I feel like it's like the same thing. Like everybody else saw something terrifying, mm-hmm. but it's just perspective at the end of the day. Like Dave, he just saw a target.
100%.
And because of his perspective, he wasn't qualified to take down a giant. Like he wasn't a giant himself. He was a thin, frail kid with a slingshot. He didn't even have a sword. So it's like, he was probably the last person in the town that would be, you know, put in that position to do something like that. But yet he did it.
Yeah.
Why? Because God, you know? So, I don't know. Great story to go back on and just think about, especially when you're in a rut yourself and you're kind of just like, I just don't think I can pull this off, you know, like a position I'll probably be in on Saturday. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, just send up those prayers.
You need that confidence. It's going to work out. Right? Yeah. It's all confidence, like you said, perspective. Just because something seems daunting or impossible doesn't mean it can't be conquered or be seen to the end, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I really like that one because it's like, it's just a target. You know, it's not a giant. It's just a target. Anybody can do anything, you know? I thought that was a really, really good one. And now you have one here. Sobriety is the pinnacle of self-development. And I like this one because you say meditation is close. Fitness is closer, but learning how to navigate through life sober is unrivaled. If you want to maximize your potential, alcohol is holding you back.
Yeah, unparalleled. I'll die by that quote. I think it's accurate. I have never, you go on Instagram, if your Instagram looks anything like mine, it's got a bunch of self-help on it. It's got big time people talking about self-help, like writing books. There's a bunch of different tools out there. I feel like sobriety, getting sober, is like not talked about enough, or I feel like it's talked about more like the health benefits with it. Like obviously I preach about this on my Instagram too, like alcohol, class 1 carcinogen linked to 7+ types of cancer. But I feel like people don't talk about the spiritual benefits that come from it, because a lot of the times, like with anything, right? Mm-hmm. When you subtract something out of your life, like it doesn't just get better right away. So like, when you stop drinking, like you still have to go out with your friends to the bar, right? Because like, you know, you're a person, but now you don't have like that crutch to lean on anymore. So it's like very, very uncomfortable. Like it's a very, very hard thing for people to do. And I feel like alcohol is like one of those things where if you eliminate it, you're not just benefiting your physical health, but you're also benefiting like your internal growth as a person and like understanding who you are. It like speeds up the process of self-discovery when you're at a bar and everybody else is drinking and you feel like uncomfortable to the point where you're thinking about how uncomfortable you are, but you still have to like survive in this social situation and talk yourself up internally and build the self-esteem like by yourself in your head to like talk to your friends or talk to the people that your friends are talking to that you don't know who they are, but you want them to like you. Like it puts you in so many situations where you just don't have this crutch anymore and you need to figure it out. And like sometimes like that's the best way to learn, like trial and error, mm-hmm. you know? So that's what was happening to me. And I, and I, I affiliate like a lot of the pain that I was going through in early recovery to this thought right here, is that like, I didn't know like how to talk myself up. Like, I didn't know how to tell myself that it's going to be okay. Like, this is normal. Yeah. Like, if everybody here wasn't drinking like me, everybody would be having these thoughts, but I'm the only person here that's not drinking at the social environment right now. So I need to figure it out, because I don't have the same like social lubricant that everybody else is like putting in their body right now. Right. I need to figure it out. So now it's like, I go out to a bar 6 years later, right? Like, I don't feel that way at all. Like, I'm good, because I know who I am. I've been in that situation so many times that like, it just doesn't even matter to me. Like, I'm good with who I am. Like, I've found myself. I've been in that uncomfortable situation. So I used to leave, like when we were in LA and I was at Sober Living, I used to leave these, they'd make us go to like sober parties, like on the 4th of July. It sucked, because like, there's like, why are we going to a party if there's not a keg, you know? Right. Like, it's just like, some of them are cool. They had like Red Bull and like, you know, you could drink like all the Red Bull you wanted. They had like Monster energy drinks there.
Oh God, no, but that ain't good for you though.
But I'd always be there in my head. And dude, I would leave these places. Like, I'd be in there for 25 minutes and I would leave sobbing my eyes out on the phone to my sponsor, or calling my mom, because I would just say like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Like, I used to go to parties all the time. I used to be the life of the party. I used to have no problem talking with people. And now like, I can't, like, I'm crawling out of my skin when I'm in there. I'd have to leave. I wouldn't even be able to stand in a corner and like talk to my buddies that I was living with. Like, I was so uncomfortable. So, you know, but I kept doing it. Like, I didn't go back to drinking. Like, I kept doing it, and like slowly it got better and I got used to it. And, I don't know. I just think it's one of those things where it's just like a massively underrated tool to not only better your physical health, but also to, you know, enhance and speed up the process of like discovering who you really are. It's a badass feeling when you can go to a social environment where 90% of the people in there are drinking, and you can be just as funny, pick up just as many girls as, you know, the guy drinking. Like, it's just, I don't need it. You know, I don't need it. I'm good.
It's probably a better look too at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Especially if you can't, you know, if you can't handle your alcohol and you get too far along, it's like, you don't need it, and it just proves that, like, you can handle that situation. Because it is, I get what you're saying, it is a crutch. I like how you reference, like, alcohol as a crutch, because it maybe loosens you up, some people, and it gets them talking. Some people loosens up, you know, too much, and then, you know what I mean, then they're passed out, and it's like, well, what kind of fun did you have anyway? Or you're hungover the next day. It's like, you don't have to worry about that.
Right.
You know, so that kind of ties into this other post you have here, that natural antidepressants that doctors don't talk about. So these are things like running, lifting weights, creative expression, you know, avoiding alcohol, acts of service, clean diet, purpose, sunlight, just being in nature. So, and praying, you know, things like that, that maybe isn't talked about enough. That post there got some decent traction. I mean, they all get phenomenal traction, but like, in the moment, what were you thinking?
I was reading through one of my books, and it was the psychiatry section, and I was looking at all of the different SSRIs, or AKA antidepressants, that we have to learn about in medical school. And they're all affiliated with like very long names that are a pain in the ass to remember. And they're also, on top of the long names, they're also affiliated with like terrible side effects and less than 30% full remission success rate. So that means that means people that like get like full recovery, experience full recovery and alleviation of depression happens in less than 30% of the people that take SSRIs, and yet they're the most prescribed drug in the nation.
That's wild.
One of the most prescribed drugs in the nation. They're up there. And I was just flipping through, which is fine. You know, like, take, if it works for you, then it works for you. Right. I'm not hating on that at all. But like, I was flipping through this section, and there's just no mention of like, you know, getting outside, like prioritizing your schedule in a way that you have the time to get outside, that you have the time to get outside when the sun's still out, because sometimes it's like, you know, we work long hours, we don't get home till set. You got to make time to like get in the sun. You got to make time to like, you know, just these natural remedies, like these behavioral things. It's like, SSRIs are cool and everything, but like my view on it has always been like, look, if we're going to like put you on this medication that's associated with like these life-altering side effects and only has a less than 30% chance of actually fully alleviating your symptoms, why don't we try some behavioral therapeutics first and then use that as like a backup plan, like a safety net? Like, let's go, because the other thing too is like, we're in the stone age of mental health and brain health, and we don't know if we take an X, if you break your arm, we can take an X-ray and we can say, your arm is broken. Look at the film. Here's where it broke. This is what it looks like. Because like, we have that technology. We do not have the technology yet to where the, to the point where like, I have depression. I want to like, we can't measure your neurotransmitter levels in your head. We can't tell you like, oh, your dopamine is this amount and it should be this amount. We can't tell you like, this is how many dopamine receptors you have on your neurons. You should have this amount. So we're going to give you this drug because this drug is going to be something that proliferates receptors on your neurons in the exact area of your brain where you need it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've always been like, especially when I was going through recovery, I was put on like handfuls of psychiatric medications where I was like falling asleep by noon. You know, I had a lot of stuff going on though, so understandably, but I've always just been, since then, I've always just been kind of under the thought process that like, look, we have these drugs and they're useful in a lot of patients. They help a lot of patients. I say 30% fully, like full remission, but like they're helping patients. They're helping more than 30% of patients. They're just not fully helping patients, right? So we have those. They're great. They're a safety net. But like sometimes all people need is like to get in like a gym routine or to like go on the nature trail that's like literally two minutes from your house that you've never explored and just like walk the dog for 30 minutes a day before you go to work. And so that's literally sometimes that's all I needed. Like I was on enough medication for a paranoid schizophrenic at one point in my recovery. And I don't take anything now. I don't take a single thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm happy as I've ever been, but I also like run like a ton. I'm also outside. I prioritize being outside, you know, all those things on that list. I'm pretty sure I do, you know, where I try to do to the best of my ability. So yeah, I was hesitant in posting that because, you know, SSRIs help people like, and that's like phenomenal. Like I'm not hating on that at all. So some people get like triggered that I'm like coming after it. I'm not coming after like SSRIs. I'm not coming after what helps you. I'm coming from a different perspective look, just because like, we don't know exactly how like running and prayer and like, you know, all these things are like, they're not in pill form. Like, doesn't mean like we can't still talk about them. And we can't still like teach like, you know, up and coming doctors that like, these things are important. Maybe you should use these before you like put a patient on an antidepressant that has like literally lethal side effects. So, yeah.
And that ties in with your quote. You put, some people need antidepressants, others need a pair of running shoes and an impossible goal. And I think the key there is that impossible goal, right?
It's
giving you something to drive to chase, to go after.
Right. Running's just always been my antidepressant. I don't know. I think some people like, some people probably need both of those things. You know, they probably need an antidepressant and running and an impossible goal, you know? For me, like I don't know. I wrote that because a lot of the times I run, I literally just take all the problems in my head that I have accumulated that day or that week. And I crumble them all up into a ball and I just like go and run until like that whole entire ball is like out of me. So, it's just always been like such like a therapeutic and meditative endeavor for me. And I don't know. I don't know if there's like anything else like really in my life that like has that power. I think it's like very closely related to like a daily dose of medicine in a way. So, that's why I wrote that one.
You're proving it because the Ironstone 100K, you know, 62 miles, elevation changing, you know, throughout the whole run. To a lot of people, that would seem like a kind of wild thing to do. But for you, it's, like you said, therapeutic.
Therapeutic, yeah. Well, also the impossible goal thing.
There we go.
Yeah, it's just, you know, putting something in front of you that you're not sure that you can do.
At all times.
That's just how, like, the best, you know, you feel the best about yourself. It's like you put something in front of you that you're not sure that you can do, but you know you should probably try to do it. And you just, you know, set out and make it happen despite what anybody tries to tell you. So yeah, I'm definitely a big, big fan of putting things that might seem impossible to you or to other people in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the last one I'll share. And then, like I said, I highly recommend listeners go to the Instagram page. It's called david.millar.mindset. And Millar is M-I-L-L-A-R. But the last one I just want to share, because again, impossible goals, right? Outlandish things that people might think outlandish at the time. But you jotted down here, you put out there, Noah looked crazy till it rained. You will too. Build anyway, even if it's never rained before. Even if they don't know what rain is, they will.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the word build too. I had another one on that where I was like, God didn't tell Noah to learn how to swim. He told him to build. I've looked crazy so many times in my life. Sometimes I'm like, if I'm not looking crazy to people, then I don't think I must be doing something wrong, because every time I've like looked crazy in other people's eyes, it's like been directly proportional to like the amount of like success that I've had at doing that thing down the road, like when it's been able to accumulate. Like last time I was on here, I talked about like being in the libraries on the weekends and being up late on Friday, Saturday, getting kicked out. And like, you know, people would see me walk, like I'd be like, it'd be Friday night and I'd be walking like back onto campus, and people would be walking away from campus to like go to some sort of party, and like they'd see me like in my backpack, and like I probably looked crazy, you know. But like also, like I had a goal, I had an impossible goal, I had a dream, like and I knew like what it was going to take for somebody like me that was like never been naturally intelligent, like, you know, had a terrible GPA, I had to get my GPA up. Like I knew like what I had to do, and it was sacrifice. And Noah was in the same situation in the Bible. It was just like, no, like, you know, imagine like, Noah, what are you doing? Like, I'm building a boat. Yeah, like, seriously. Why?
It looked crazy, probably, right? You know, outlandish, but it was something that he was called to do. And like your shirt says, he was too, you're too obsessed to party, too obsessed to think about anything else. Like, this is the target. This is what I need to achieve. And I'm going to do anything in my power to do it, you know, to make sure it happens.
Right.
Yeah. Let's take a quick snack break. This snack break is brought to you by Jerky Beef Jerky. When late night editing episodes for the podcast, Jerky Beef Jerky keeps me fueled and ready to go with 11 grams of protein, high quality ingredients, and no nitrates or nitrites. With 5 different flavors to choose from, Jerky Beef Jerky. Eat, meat, repeat. So to pick back up, I do want to, again, just briefly mention, you know, for the listeners, episode 133 featuring David Millar. Highly recommend it because it's more of a deep dive into your life, you know, your backstory. It's pretty intense for the listeners that haven't listened, or new listeners out there. Highly recommend it. If you want to learn more about David's work, or view his highly motivational Instagram page, check out the links in the show notes below. And if today's episode resonated with you, please share it, leave a review, and follow American Grown Podcast for more stories from the heart of our community. But David, before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know? Anything coming up you want to share?
Follow me on Instagram if you liked anything that I said. David period Millar period mindset. Posting on there daily. Not planning on stopping anytime soon, so if you want some motivation, want to hear more about my thoughts, go on there. And can I ask you I asked you a question last time, I feel like I gotta ask you a question again.
Okay, snap, all right. Yeah, I'm ready for a question.
All right.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, what's what's been the hardest thing about starting this podcast?
Well, I like when you ask me questions. I wish more guests would be maybe ballsy enough to do so, because I'm sure they all have questions, but no one asks. So the hardest thing in starting the podcast, I would say, is just that, is starting episode one, you know, and putting yourself out there. You know, I think like we talked about a little bit earlier, even though I'm in sales, I talk to a lot of people, I'm kind of a very... My wife would probably call me a hermit. You know, I kind of like being at home, like being quiet.
So
you know, yeah, exactly. Like, I don't like to be the life of the party. Like, if I'm out, you know, I use that crutch. I have a drink or two, you know, to kind of loosen up. But I'm not a big drinker. I'm not a big partier, you know. I think I'm very introverted. And yeah, I think that was the toughest thing, was like overcoming, okay, like what are people from high school going to think, you know? But wait, I haven't seen them in like 10 plus years. So who really cares what they think? Or like, you know, these people from college that I did track and field, you know, Kutztown, what are they going to think? Oh, what does it matter? You know, what does it really matter? But that's, I think, some of the hardest things, just putting yourself out there in anything, you know, whether it's a new career, a new hobby, a podcast, posting on social media. I think it's sometimes going to be tricky just to be like, okay, what are people going to think? But if you don't do it and you don't give it a shot, how do you know if you like it, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like what the experience is going to be like. So I would say that on maybe a more personal level, but I feel like every creative goes through something like that. In general, starting a podcast is, like, if you're thinking about starting one, the equipment, the cost of entry can be tough, you know. And of course, anyone can grab a mic with poor quality and, I guess, do a podcast, but I try to put out the best quality I can. And then finding other people, as of late, something tricky is finding guests that want to share their story. I have a form, you know, you filled out, and I have 163 people. Someone just filled it out yesterday, and I was like, yes, okay, a new guest. Like, I'm going to be emailing that person tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that can be tricky now, because it's getting to the point where I've gone through a lot of those people. I need to get better personally on DMs, on Instagram and Facebook. So if you have direct message me, don't take it personally. I'm not ignoring you. It's just life, and, you know, this is something fun, a creative outlet. So there's a lot of people on there that I know have messaged me, and I got to get back to. I want to have these on. So I would say, like I said, it's judgment, it's cost of entry if you're talking about actually starting one, and then it's you know, finding guests and people to share their story. Right. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, there's rewarding parts about it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a fault. Was that a good one?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Now you're the host.
I love.
So what's the next question, David?
I love how you talked about like the creative like endeavor, because I feel like you understand like this. Like, I feel like there's only like a subset of people that like really understand like the creative like desire to like. And I feel like this is like that for you. It's just like, you know, you just need to like. It's like a form of expression, and I'm the same way. It's like, if I don't put something out into the world, like once a week or once a day or whatever, like I feel like I'm like missing out on something, you know. I just like have that creative like drive in me, and I've always had it, like even when I was like drinking, even before drinking, and like if anything, like getting sober like even like amplified it even more, because I removed something that like gave me like a lot of enjoyment for a while. So then it's like, well, I need more enjoyment, so I need more creative outlet. I need to be double down on the creativity, you know. And I just like get that vibe from you that like you're one of those people that like you need like these pillars of ways that you can like creatively express yourself in your life on a consistent basis, or else like you just like it drives you nuts if you don't have it.
Yeah, well, you gotta have fun, you know what I mean? Yeah, and like I said, it's something totally different. You know, back in high school, college, when I ever thought about trying to launch a podcast and now having one, heck no, I would have never thought about this. Yeah. You know, but it's something that I enjoy doing. And like I said, I put out content. I want to get better at video, because video is king, you know, sure. But like I said, I mean, the fact that young guy, the Dunhams, he was like, hey, I listened to your podcast. I was like, dude, I don't even care if you're the only person that listens, man. I'm doing it for you now, because like that meant so much. And I know there's other people out there that are just as hardcore listeners as him, you know, and some's like, you know, people I don't even know.
Right.
There's one guy, he's like, be like a great uncle over in Germany. And I know he listens consistently, because I always see that red mark. So shout out to Brian. I know you're listening out there. But like, yeah, it's, and if you don't do it, you know, it's like, we always question like, why, what could have happened? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like with you, if you never went for medical school, you know, if you were just listening to everybody else saying you're crazy, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Where would you be now? You know, probably not medical.
No, not here.
Yeah, not here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like it, though. Any other questions? That was a good one. I like when you ask questions. Flip the script.
I'm coming with a list.
I like it. Part three.
Similar to your list over there.
All right, let's do it. Okay, part three. Yeah, we'll run it back sometime. You're always welcome. Yeah. You know, for sure. And if you know of anybody that wants to share their story, you know.
Dude, we got to get Bill up here, too.
Oh, yeah. How's he doing?
We got to get Bill up here.
How's he? Yeah.
He's got to come, like, he's got to get, like, the full 45-minute.
Well, let's go. Yeah. I can have you both because I got two guests.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe we will do that.
Shout out to Bill if you're listening.
Yeah, shout out, Bill.
That's awesome. Yeah. And for the listeners that don't know who we're talking about, listen to episode 133 and you can find out. So, yeah, I'll close it out. David, thank you not just for being here, but for what you're doing. You know, you're using your body and your voice to give attention to people who so often go unseen. Your story is a reminder that healing isn't just a medical process, it's a human one. And awareness is the first step. David Millar, medical student at Penn State College of Medicine and an ultra endurance athlete who is 6 years sober and an advocate for addiction recovery. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now. Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.